And we are live. We are actually live this time, not pre-recorded, nothing like that. I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York. Thank you for tuning in. You know, during the summer, we're always at whatever times we can make work. This time, it was 8:40 at night. But no. Tons of stuff we're going to get into. We are going to talk NBA. We are going to talk some NFL, some NHL, and all things in between. Tonight's episode is called The Butcher because, well, I'll get into it a little later. Well, no. All right. Overall theme for tonight is The Butcher because not only did I just watch a show about butchers that I thought was really cool, but you got to think about what makes a good butcher and what makes a great butcher. And that is knowing what cuts to make or what moves to make, you know, to display the best results. We get into a lot of different teams and a lot of different things where sometimes I think I know what they're trying to do. And then we're going to get into specifically two NFL teams that I'm not sure they even have a sharp knife. Now, I want to start by talking to Atlanta United. If I remember, I will get into some UEFA League here in a minute. But no, let's talk to Atlanta United. Now, Atlanta United has played two games in the time that we have talked. Since we last talked, they played in Real Salt Lake against, well, Real Salt Lake. That was back on Saturday. No, Friday. That was Friday. My out-of-town trip got delayed a little bit, so I was actually not traveling. I got to see that game. And just overall, Atlanta didn't look their sharpest. Let's see how many butcher-related things we can say tonight. They didn't look their sharpest. Now, were they trying to cut with a dull knife? No. Were they hacking up a tenderloin there that could have easily been good? No. They're playing okay. I just feel like you know, you let Salcedo for Real Salt Lake just kind of dribble in the top of the box and just uncorked one is what it is, you know? He's just that good of a player. He's towards the top of the box. He just kind of dribbled through, and when the defender kind of backed off of him, he said, okay, and just let one rip. Guzan did what he could, but best goalies in the world, including Brad Guzan, can't stop them all. Parkhurst with the yellow card, so what? Herrera got one, you know, yellow card for Real Salt Lake. Joseph Martinez with the equalizer in the 78th minute. And then in the fourth minute of stoppage time, Severino with the dagger. Now, I thought the match should have been called a couple seconds before then. Once again, I'm not the referee. It is not up to me when it ends or starts, and I don't blame that for the goal. I blame tired legs for Atlanta United, and I blame just maybe it was from being tired. They just got a little sloppy. Real Salt Lake realized it and put everything they could forth for that last effort, and it paid off. And they end up getting the victory. They stopped the streak of Atlanta, five in a row. And handed them their first loss. Now, what did this do for Atlanta? They're still up towards the top of the East. Not that worried about it because they had another game to play. And the other game they had to play was just last night. I actually watched it a couple times. Last night, as they were at home finally, they welcomed in Minnesota United FC. never really got why you had to say United and NFC. I always thought it was, I mean, but, I don't know. Just my thing. But this game went a little better. It seemed like this was the first time in four or five games that Atlanta United's players actually had more rest than their opponents. Up until now, it was like they would get 2 or 3 days, and everybody else was getting 3 or 4. Just the way the schedule was balancing. It's not excuses. They didn't use it as one. But the game last night, as we welcomed in Minnesota United, Escobar with the just magnificent strike, 23rd minute. Miles Robinson picked up a yellow card in the 29th. He kind of earned that one a little bit. Opar got one in the 32nd. But, hey, different from last game. Instead of being down 1-0, you're up 1-0 going into halftime. Early in the second half, you got Dunlady. You got the yellow card for Minnesota. Escobar got one in the 83rd minute. And then it was like an alley-oop play because all of a sudden you find Joseph Martinez out front. He dances around the defender. Smokes one past the goalie, 2-0. That was into the first minute of stoppage time. And then in the fourth, just 3 minutes later, they catch him all alone. In one of these, I can't remember if it's second or third, he actually dribbles around a defender, kicks the ball, kind of chips the ball up in the air, and on like the second bounce, just crushes it into the back of the net. Martinez ends up with 2, Escobar with the other one. As I said, that is 3-0. That is another clean sheet for Brad Guzan. If I'm not mistaken, I believe the stat is either all of last year they had 9 clean sheets or shutouts, and this year they already have 8. That could be the opposite. Let me see if I can find that stat. Let's see here. I know this is great radio. Shout out to one of our more avid listeners who I know gets the word out about our show. We definitely appreciate Keel Coleman. Hopefully you're enjoying your route. I know you like listening to us while you're on your route, especially on the weekends. We're definitely going to have to not be strangers so much. And I don't know. We owe you lunch or something, man. We definitely appreciate it. See if I can find it. Somewhere, it was earlier today. I think Doug Robertson had it. I would imagine he did. It was a great stat. I feel bad I didn't have it already queued up. Anyway, it's something along those lines. I don't know. I can't find it now. But it's something along the lines of they had 9 clean sheets all of last year, and they have 8 this year already, or it's the other way around. They had 8 last year. They already have 9 now. It's one or the other. But it's just incredible that when they are winning, they are shutting the other team out. Here's to starting another win streak. Let me look at the old handy-dandy calendar here. This is an actual calendar on the wall. Owls, for anybody who wants to know. Okay, this Saturday, they're going to welcome in the Chicago Red Bulls. Or no, the Chicago Fire. Sorry, I can't read my own writing. Chicago Fire, that is a 6 p.m. start. And then they have a couple weeks off, so it'd be good to recharge everything. But this Saturday, 6 p.m., the Chicago Fire, our Atlanta United. Should be good, you know. Speaking of which, at 3 o'clock, it will be Liverpool and Tottenham in the UEFA Champions League final. This is going to be incredible. Myself and John from right here at Impact Media and does a lot of stuff with Board Check. We're going to make sure to be able to watch that game. It's 3 p.m. start at that one. So it should be a lot of fun. And my overall, I don't know who to pick in this one. Because see, here's what we run into. John is a Manchester United fan. I'm a West Ham fan. So as far as this game goes, we not only don't have a dog in the fight, but there are some alliances and villains involved as far as our sides are concerned. I wouldn't mind if Tottenham wins, but I just think Liverpool is going to win this one like 3-2 or 3-1. Let's go 3-2. 3-2 Liverpool over Tottenham. It's going to be my overall prediction on that one. And if you guys are watching the game somewhere, definitely text us, tweet us out, whatever, and we'll give you a shout out. But definitely check those out. I also think that the next Stanley Cup final, Game 3, is going to be on Saturday. We will get to that. We have the replay of Game 2 playing right now. We'll actually get into that. Let's get into that right now. We'll make sure I got everything. Atlanta United, they lose in Salt Lake 2-1. They win versus Minnesota here at home 3-0. UEFA Champions League at 3 p.m. this weekend, I think on TNT. I could be wrong. TNT here locally. And at 6 is the Atlanta United game as they host the Chicago Fire. Now, Stanley Cup. Like I said, we're watching replay of Game 2 right here. So far, both these games are very, very similar. These teams are a lot closer matched than previously thought, than a lot of other people think. It goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. We'll go Game 1 first. It just, like I said, super, just back and forth, to where you kind of start to wonder who might actually win. And then the Boston Bruins came home. It was magnificent. Brad Marchand might just be the most underrated player in the league. And it wasn't even him that scored it. Last night was actually the overtime, or the game two was. Game one was Boston ended up putting a shorthanded goal in. I mean, a empty netter as well. But, you had Shin, who started it off, and then Tarasenko. It was actually 2-0 Blues at one point into the second. And then Clifton buries one, McAvoy buries one, and we're all tied. He starts the third, a handful of minutes in, and Curley puts one in. And then Brad Marchand, the unassisted wrister, open netter, just seals the deal. How close was this? Well, Boston dominated a lot of the offensive stats. They had 18 more shots than the Blues did. That was 38-20. The Bruins did have the power play goal. They were 1-for-5. The Blues were 0-2. Now, that was another thing I wanted to get into a little bit that I'll get into. It's not worth a big thing, but Boston sometimes commits penalties that are avoidable, and then sometimes you just get caught in the wrong spot, and you need to take the penalty. But hits were pretty even. It was 33 to 32 Blues. The Bruins blocked five more shots. And this is it's really a pretty tight game, and that's ultimately what it comes down to. Like I said, the Bruins go up 1-0. That gave us into game two. I already told you it goes to overtime. Why did it go to overtime? Well, you got Coyle who put one in the back of the net. The equalizer from Bortuzzo, his second of the playoffs. Nordstrom puts one in the back. This is all in the first period. Then Tarasenko ties it up. It seems like every time Boston scored, the Blues had an answer. It seriously was just a couple of minutes apart on all of those. And then Gunnarsson. Gunnarsson buries it for the Blues. You know, almost 4 minutes into overtime, it was a fantastic shot. St. Louis dominated a little bit more of this one the same way that Boston did in the first game. St. Louis seemed to do in this one. They had 14 more shots, 37 to 23. Boston, once again, were 1-for-5 on the power play. The Bruins are going to make you pay if you go to the penalty box. The Blues had way more hits. It was 50 to 31 on that one, so 19 more. The Bruins, once again, blocked more shots. I had less giveaways and less takeaways as well. But this sets up Game 3. Man, it's just going to be a day of watching a lot of stuff. On NBCSN here locally, the Bruins and the Blues. This is going to be in St. Louis this Saturday, 8 p.m. Gosh, so much to watch that day. It's going to be crazy. Let's see. That'd be Game 3. Game 4. See, I was going to do just Borchek, but I only had one game to talk about. Now we have two games to talk about. Now we can preview the next couple games. Game 4 will be in St. Louis as well. That is on Monday. That will be 8 p.m. Clearly, this thing's going to go at least 5 games. So, Game 5 is going to be back in Boston on Thursday. That is an 8 p.m. game. And by then, we'll be back on the show. We're just going to keep doing these double shows because that way we can talk about each section of games there. I do seriously think this is still going 6. I do think Boston is still going to do it. They're going to find a way like they usually do. But that's why you continue to watch. I do want to give a quick shout out to the now former voice of the Atlanta Gladiators, Chris Treft. He is, I don't know if he's moving on to a different job or what. I don't know all the details. I just know that he is no longer, he had a great tribute and great, some great words that he said to all the fans and organization on social media over the weekend. And he's definitely going to be missed. He is fantastic. So much fun to listen to. He makes it feel like you're sitting right there at center ice. Chris, we thank you for everything you did, and we wish you good luck on all your future endeavors. And just once again, thanks on behalf of everybody here at Borchek and Impact Media and everything there. Okay, what can we get into now? Let's talk a little NBA. Talk a little NBA here. And let's start with this. I know I probably kind of previewed a little bit last week. I still do think that the Warriors, if I had to put money on it, be super serious about it, something like that, I would say Warriors in 5, otherwise known as a gentleman's sweep. It's not that I don't think Toronto has a chance, because I think the Raptors very much do have a chance. They're a lot like Portland. Portland is is a team that slowed things down against the Warriors. That is one way to combat them because they're going to want to move fast. They don't have KD. They're probably not going to have him for the entire I think for the rest of the playoffs. I think him or Boogie Cousins are not going to play. And that's not like some big hot take. That's almost proven fact at this point. But does Toronto stand a chance? Yes, they very much do. Kawhi Leonard has been one of the best players in the league, especially on this playoff run. Just a bunch of young, great players that can slow the Warriors down. And that in itself is something that, like I said, not a lot of teams can say. Portland did a good job. That's why they did as well as they did in that series. So Toronto stands a chance. And if they were to somehow take this to at least six or, I mean, even possibly a seventh and win, it would not surprise me, honestly. Wouldn't surprise me. In fact, I would kind of applaud it because at least it would be something different. And I don't have a problem with the Warriors winning because if I had a problem with the Warriors winning, then I'd have to have a problem when the Patriots win as much as they do or the Yankees or something like that. No, it's one of those, you got a problem with somebody winning, beat them. It just comes to that. You can't get mad at somebody that wins all the time. You need to beat them. The other thing I want to talk about is this is what the NBA has kind of become in the last few years, and it kind of really bugged me, but it's very interesting. And that is that what dominates the NBA culture and the NBA talk, and when people talk about basketball and the National Basketball Association, they talk more about the future than the present. I'm okay if you don't talk past so much because you can only talk so much of that to me. You do need to talk more about present and future. But instead of talking about the NBA Finals coming up, people have been talking past it for 6 months. They're more worried about where Kemba Walker's going to go, where Kawhi Leonard might go, where if Kobe Bryant can get somebody to come play with the Lakers, if Kevin Durant decides to leave. Everybody wants to talk more about where – play Fantasyland, about where the free agents could go. That's fine. If that's what you want to talk about, that's one thing. You know, I've given my opinion on some of them. Jimmy Butler's and people like that. There are some big names that they could potentially be on the move. In fact, I'll make a pitch for the Hawks to try to land one of them in particular. If he decides to go elsewhere, I very much think he would pair very well with what the Hawks are building. But no, it's just interesting because like in the NHL, the main storyline in the NHL right now, obviously, are the Stanley Cup Finals, which are currently going on. The upcoming draft, and then games coming up next season, such as preparations for the Winter Classic and Heritage Games and things like that. That's usually how the NHL goes. It's you're talking about somebody on a big point streak, a goalie who's just playing just undeniably great, maybe a coach is getting a second chance or they got fired. You're usually talking about some of the better players of the game and streaks is what happens. Then you get to the playoffs, you talk more playoffs, you occasionally talk a little draft like it's doing now, and then into next season specialized games like that. In baseball, this baseball is having an issue because the top storylines are Bryce Harper not hitting, Mike Trout still being on a not-so-good Angels team, Cody Bellinger, and Christian Yelich having just fantastic years. There's somebody else, I can't think of who it was. I totally apologize for that, but they're having fantastic years. But you should be talking more Dodgers even, but all you get is Cody Bellinger. And Cody Bellinger is great. He's fantastic. He's having a great year. But the dominating talk, like even here locally, I'm surrounded by Braves fans, big Braves fans, people that watch as many games as they can, whether they're person or whether on TV, they talk about it. When they're together, they do talk about it in depth. But I've noticed this season, they've talked less time-wise than they did last season. And it's not because the Braves are any worse or any better. We all know that they need bullpen help. The Craig Kimbrell thing comes up occasionally. But no, here locally, Braves fans are talking more of either A, trying to go see a game, which I definitely think you should. I've already been to one this year. Had a great time. Always do. Or talking about Craig Kimbrell or the bullpen. They talk about that for fans. Talk about that for a few minutes. Then they move on to other things. So let's see. We talked basketball, baseball, hockey, football. The football storylines. You either hear these not news stories. And for media outlets that need to write a lot of articles, I totally get it. I have no problem because you guys write good articles. I enjoy the information you give. But to me, telling me that head coach A wants to see more out of player X, this person is practicing hard during OTAs, I would hope so. You know, it's just, like I said, they're not reaching because these are reputable people who are covering this. But you got to give me an actual story in the NFL. But for right now, you're just going to hear these people are practicing hard or this, expecting more, implementing more of the playbook with this player. You're going to get those. That's the way. But once the NFL starts, clearly it dominates because of who wins and loses each week and a big-time injury or somebody outplaying their expected win total or not playing up to expectations, that kind of thing. But, no, like I said, the NBA, it's so weird. The NBA, all year long, what could happen after the season dominates what's actually happening during the season. And that's something they're going to have to address if they want to have the sustainability to stay where they're at or potentially move up and be a slightly more popular sport. They're not going to catch football, at least right now, but to be the number two or number three, you're going to have people talking about your actual present day. I don't know how you can get them to do that because everybody is so geared to what happen after the season that, you know, the other main storyline, you know, you got a little bit of playoff talk. You got it's being dominated by what all the free agents or what all the potential free agents or just players in general or this trade or that trade or Anthony Davis and this kind of stuff. A little bit of draft. You got to get people talking about the present. And before I move on from NBA, here is my player the Hawks should target if he is an actual target this summer. There is a particular player on a really good team. He is considered probably third or fourth best player on his current team, but it's because his team's really good. You guys are probably starting to figure out who I'm talking about. When you pair him with a Vince Carter, you pair him with a Trae Young, and, you know, on this Hawks team, I very much think that this could be a really, really good pickup. If I'm the Hawks and Klay Thompson of the Warriors, who could potentially have another piece of hardware in a couple, you know, the end of next week or so, if Klay Thompson decides that since the media is costing him Supermax, which would be an extra $30 million on his next contract, and decides, well, now the money's even wherever I go, which practically will be, I think the Hawks should make an appeal for him to come play with Trae Young. He would be the automatic one, or best player on the team. Trae Young's really good, but he's young. But Trae Young, for lack of a better way to put it, Trae Young is a great point. Point guard, he's a great ball handler. He can shoot as well. And having Klay can help with bring the ball to the floor a little bit if need be. He plays pretty good defense, but he is a gunner. And having that gunner where Trae Young can come down and you don't just automatically throw on him, now people have to worry about Klay on the wing, which opens up Vince Carter down below for some of those dunks that he is so famous for. See, to me, that gives us at least three viable options, plus some other moves that could be done. I really think Klay Thompson should be an Atlanta Hawk next year. Maybe I'm being a little selfish because I, you know, recently got back into the Hawks last year. But I would love to see Klay Thompson here, and hopefully, Klay, if you're listening, consider it. We'll see if that actually works or anything. Hopefully it does. What else is it? Oh, last thing I want to get into was some NFL stuff. Just one main thing in particular. And it is to determine what two particular teams are actually doing. This is where the butcher thing comes in. So like I said, if you're a good butcher, you want to make sure you have a good set of knives. You want to make sure those knives are sharp. And you want to make sure you know that when you put a knife in your hand, that you actually know how to cut a piece of meat so that you get maximum value for it, and that it is the best, once prepared, is the best thing your customer has ever eaten. For all you vegetarians out there, my apologies. But I just feel like two teams in particular need to maybe even sharpen their knives, if not determine if they're actually holding spoons. Now, they're not complete dumpster fires at this point, but one in particular could be headed there in a hurry, and another one kind of needs to get off their pedestal because not sure what that pedestal is made of. I don't think it's a strong material. Let's start with the Oakland Raiders. You know, as Colin Cowherd said, they've kind of had four strategies this year. First strategy: we're not going to pay anybody but the quarterback. We're going to really beef up our draft picks, and we're going to draft all of our new people as we potentially move to Vegas in a year or so, or whenever that happens. Okay, so they built all those draft picks, and then they just kidding. We really want to overpay Trent Brown. We really want to bring in Vontaze Burfict. We really want to get Antonio Brown. Okay. And then we're going to reach, but we're going to get some character guys because we really need to build up the character. I don't know how many of them you could draft, but they're not going to balance out Vontaze Burfict and Antonio Brown among anybody else, ego-wise. But then you do that, and then we already know Derek Carr's almost lame duck at this point. And then now, the Raiders go from all those good character guys, you know, trying to balance out the other two, and you go inside a guy who not only did not play last season, there's a reason Richie Incognito did not play last season, and that is because he's a head case who needs to get some things straightened out, probably some counseling. Something the NFL apparently just missed was sometime in April, he got arrested for like punching a hole in his grandma's wall and making some damage. On top of all this stuff, I just don't get what Oakland is trying to do, and I don't think they have a plan either. I think they think they're playing Madden or something like that. They need to find some cheat codes. I'm not saying they should cheat. They need to find some kind of code to aid them and help them out because they are just doing it. They're just all over the place. Like I said, you've had four different directions. And I'm taking this from Colin, but it's a really good point. Four different directions, and you've only – four different directions since, like – February. Newsflash, that's less than 6 months ago. That's only a couple months ago. First, you don't want to pay anybody. We're not going to pay anybody but the quarterback. We get all these draft picks. well, just kidding, we're going to sign these, we're going to overpay for these veterans, okay? Just kidding, we're going to draft and reach for high character guys. Okay? No, we're going to sign Richie Incognito. Guys, they don't know what they're doing. I thought Mike Mayock may be able to balance out John Gruden, and John Gruden being one of my favorite coaches. I don't get it. I'm definitely not on board. I'm definitely not on board with this at all. And, I mean, I know Oakland fans in general are not, but Raiders fans, Raider Nation, you got to say something here because they may not make it to Vegas. If they just collapse among themselves and burst into flames at this point, spontaneous combustion maybe. No, they're really going to make it to Vegas. We know that. But just by the time they get there, they're going to be a shell of a shell of a shell of themselves. I mean, they might as well be the Oakland Serpents because they are shedding so many layers of skin at this point, they're almost down to just bone and muscle. Oakland's got to get their act together. If I'm Derek Carr, I try to save the ship as best I can. But, you know, if this thing starts to go south in a hurry, I get with my agent and I go talk to Mike Mayock and John Gruden and I get out of town. It's just beyond fascinating anymore. It's almost sad to watch the Raiders continue to make these moves like they've never done it before. And then, obviously, the other team, the Cleveland Browns. Here's some things, Browns fans. Browns fans, be excited for your team. Browns fans, be hopeful for the future. This is not really directed at you. This is directed at players, personnel, and the front office in the way you're presenting your product. Like, what? Almost 3 months ago, you traded for Odell Beckham Jr. He has spent all of 72 hours in the city of Cleveland, including not recently at all. OTAs is where you start to put in offenses. In fact, his first year, but new head coach, says, yeah, he missed some significant stuff. And they said when they pressed the coach for more, he said, was it Freddie Kitchens? They pressed Coach Kitchens a little bit. He goes, the offense. They started stalling the offense and started going over things like that. Star player, best player on the field is not even close to the field, if not on. And it's not like he's got an injury and they're covering it up. No, they seem genuinely pissed off that he's not there. And they should be. So there's one thing. Two, all the hope and promise that you're pushing, you guys were 7-8-1 last year. You didn't have a winning record. You were a half game under 500. So let's not get ahead of ourselves thinking that you guys are going to suddenly win 10 or 11 games. How about this? Vegas says you're going to win 9. It should be a lot higher given the promise, given the moves you made, the fact you do have Odell Beckham, those kinds of things. It should be high. You should potentially win 10 or 11, but they know you guys are the Browns and you're a head case, and usually you find a way to screw it up. So there's another thing. Once again, fans, not your fault. Be hyped about your team. It's that time of year. They're going to feed you the, oh, this guy's practicing hard. Oh, this. Hey, but be excited for your team. Because as of right now, 32 teams have the potential to win the Super Bowl next February. 32 teams. Everybody's in the running. I don't care how. Even the Arizona Cardinals. Everybody thinks they're going to be the worst team. Well, I don't know. I think Miami's going to have a pretty good run for that, too. But you never know. Miami can go undefeated, win everything. I doubt it. Sorry to big-time Miami fan Corey Barney, but Corey, I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl this year. Sorry. It is what it is. But everybody has that potential at this point. That's no problem there. But, you know, going back, Odell Beckham, best player on your team, has not shown up. That's a problem. Voluntary, involuntary, doesn't matter. Hasn't shown up. Two, you were 7-8-1 last year. Don't get ahead of yourself. Three, you're face of the team quarterback, instead of worrying about, I don't know, learning the offense and potentially, I don't know, getting the best player on your team, a.k.a. the guy he'll be throwing to a majority of the year, Odell Beckham Jr., instead of getting him in the building, getting his cleats on, getting him on the practice field so that you can get a camaraderie, you can get comfortable throwing to him. Instead of worrying about that, Baker Mayfield, what are you currently doing? You're trying to start a Twitter war with Colin Cowherd, who is not even barely responding to what you do. He's only bringing it up just to address it. But he's not one to come back at you on Twitter. You keep saying he's a liar, he does all this stuff like that. He's an opinionist. He's always been an opinionist. He's been around for 20-plus years. There's a reason why he is the best at what he does, because he doesn't pick petty fights on social media with quarterbacks who were 7-8-1 last year. So get your head in the game, Baker. Get serious about it. Get on the phone. Call Odell Beckham Jr. Say, get yourself to practice. Yes, Allen Iverson, practice. Get yourself to practice. We got to make this thing work. So while Oakland, we all know, is sliding down the hill on a runaway sled, Cleveland is pretty much tying the plank on the side of the boat. They took a step or so out on it. How long before they run out and jump off of it in typical Cleveland fashion? I don't know. Maybe they turn around and get back on the boat and put it back together. I don't know what they're going to do. But this is why we watch, and this is why it's fun to talk about things like this. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this week's episode. But yeah, as you know, if these two organizations were butchers, I would wonder if they are trying to cut things with spoons at this point. That's the best way I think I could put it. This has been Sports Club Borcheck, the Butcher. I am Jeremy the Impact York. We will see you guys next week. Deuces, gooses.
These guys are warriors.
Was that not clear without the bam? Yeah, okay. Bam!